With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the old-timey edition of the playoff editions of the True Blue LA podcast. I volunteered at a call bank once and accidentally called into a voicemail that was just a sharp advice, like a betting advice, and it was this 40-minute long voicemail that answering machine message. So I'm going to pretend that's what this is like. Eric the Eagle, Jacob the Sharp, how you doing, Eric?
Pretty good, and stay tuned for our 5-star lock of the week.
let's start on the bad news. Does that lock of the week involve the Dodgers catcher, Yasmani Grandal?
Yeah, I mean,
and whatever the under is.
it was really bad. Like he's been struggling in the postseason, and like I think we talked about this on the last episode because
we did.
John Wiseman brought it up. Like he was like 5 for 59 in his postseason career, and like 2 for his last 45.
I think he listened to the podcast and said, "You think I can't do worse?"
Yeah, I'm no expert on internet memes, but I think the phrase he used was "hold my beer." but he in game one. He had two pass balls, two errors, and it was bad. And he actually did get a hit later in that game, he's like one for he. And then he grounded into a double play in game two, so he's 6 for 64 now. But look, he's definitely like he's better than that, obviously. But it's like, man, you like every. Sort of a negative possible outcome like happened for him. There was one.
Yeah, grounded into a bases loaded, one out rally killing double play.
Right, like all you can hear is like the entire time, like John Smoltz, like, 47 times in a row saying, these guys today, they strike out. Like all you have to do, it's like the easiest thing in the world, is just ground a ball to shortstop and you have a run. Like he's. And that's like his main like offensive thrust, and then there's a downside to that, so I don't know, it was bad, but yeah. So at some point they the graphic came up on the screen. So Grandal, he's like the first player in postseason history, I think, to have two errors and two passed balls in one game, and one of the errors was. Here's how weird game one was. One of the errors was catcher's interference. And it was on a ball like that was hit like so hard. It was like a line drive out at a time when like Clayton Kershaw desperately needed him out because he was scuffling. And like the fact that the ball was hit that hard while the bat hit Grandal's glove, like that was a bad sign in itself for Kershaw. But like it becomes an error. The batter reaches base, but like it's so weird because like of all the like strengths Grandal has, so like he's one of the best like offensive catchers in the game. Like he's not a high average guy, obviously, but he hits home runs, he walks, and like behind the plate, he's like one of the best catchers at like framing pitches. But like it seems like it's so bizarre that he could be so good at framing and yet still like not catch the ball like more often than most catchers. Like he led the National League in pass balls last year. He was tied for the league lead this year. it's like, and then, you know, there's been plays at the plate where he just flat out, like, you know, drops a ball. Like, that'll happen. But it's like, man, it seems to happen more often than not with Grandal, which is so odd because he's so good at framing. And then to have, like, the catcher's interference stuff, I get it if you're trying to, like, you know, I don't know the exact technique, but maybe they're stabbing at the ball, you know, to try to put it in a spot that it makes it look like a strike, and maybe that's why it happens. But I don't know. It just seems it's very odd. It's like the weird dichotomy of Yasmani Grandal. But I think, he's in desperate need of like a little bit of a turnaround or a pick me up.
Yeah, we'll step back a little bit now. I wanted to start there just because if we're talking about a lock of the week, that seems to be the only thing we really, and we and a lot of other people nailed going into this series. Going into this series, the Dodgers are now 1-1 in the series, so it's a best of five series, so to speak. The Dodgers have a home field advantage. Going into the series, it was going to be Clayton Kershaw is great. The Milwaukee Brewers bullpen is unbeatable. The Brewers are nearly unbeatable. And that's the kind of framing of the series we were going to get. Dodgers would have to score early, and then the Brewers would have to scrap together something. That's not what we got.
Just like we all thought, right? Clayton Kershaw was – last series, 8 scoreless innings at home against the Braves, it was his longest postseason start ever. And then – so he followed that up against the Brewers with his shortest postseason start ever.
This team this year, though.
Right. Nothing comes, like, as planned. Like, you know, they might eventually, like, end up on top, but it's like they're not going to do it in some sort of, like, formulaic way, you know. Like, Kershaw, he pitched 3 innings. He pitched into the fourth, couldn't get out of it. He gave up – the most astonishing part was, like, he gave up a home run to Brandon Woodruff, who, I mean, he's a minor league. He's started mostly in the minor league, but he's a reliever. He pitched in relief in this game. And it was crushed. Like it was a 2-strike pitch, and it was, you know, fastball down the middle, whatever. It's a reliever. You're not going to, like, try – you're not going to walk him or whatever. But, man, it was a crush ball. And so it was like, historic because, well, A, it was a lefty hitting a home run off Kershaw, which – you know, he gives up home runs, but it still doesn't happen that often. But also a lefty pitcher, that's ridiculous. But in the postseason, it's the first time a left-handed batting pitcher has hit a home run off a left-handed pitcher. So, like, her history was made in game one.
Great.
And then, like, wait, like, just piling on that for a little bit, Wade Miley in the next game, he doubled and singled. Like, so, like, the Brewers pitchers are like just like raking in this series, so that's sort of the standout. But no, this, like, you're talking about, this series is so weird. So the Kershaw gave up the 4 runs, and 5 runs, 4 of them were earned, so they're down 5-1, I believe, and then it's Milwaukee bullpen time. So that's, you know, game one going to the Brewers probably. And then the weird thing is, so it's 5-1. I mean, look, it's a playoffs. Nothing's insurmountable. But, like, they went to Josh Hader.
Game one of a 5-1 game. Like,
yeah. And, like, look, Josh Hader's their best reliever by far. He's a lefty. He's especially, like, lights out and neutralized. He neutralizes lefties especially. So Hader pitched the 5th through the 7th, 3 innings, with a 4-run lead. Like, this was odd because, they've used him, like, he's a multi-inning guy, but also, like, he, in a weird way, like, he's almost rarely a back-to-back guy. So, like, they've only, I think they used him since the beginning of August, like, twice in back-to-back days. So, like, you know, maybe the fact that he's pitching in game one meant he might not pitch in game two, but they removed all doubt. And it just seemed weird it's not the middle, it is the middle innings. It was innings 5-7. It seemed odd for him to pitch 3 innings, which completely knocked him out for game two. And we'll get to that. But, like, he was awesome. Like, he pitched, 3 scoreless innings. He struck out 4. He did allow 2 hits, but it was like, look, they didn't really threaten. But then it seems like once Hader was out and you knew he wasn't going to be ready, like available in game two, it seems like that's when the Dodger offense like sort of came alive. They rallied against the rest of the relievers for Baltimore, and they actually cut that game to the Brewers added a run, so they ended up winning 6-5, Brewers in game one. But the fact that it was close, and yeah. I think they had the tying run 90 feet away in game one, so like, but that game was a loss pretty early, and they almost made it, you know, they almost came back. But then you go to the next day, and Hader is not available, so then the Dodgers, like, took advantage there, too. Like, we talked about Wade Miley, he didn't give up a run, he pitched into the sixth, so things were looking a little more, a little bleak. I mean, it wasn't like a blowout or anything, but the Brewers were up 3-0. But then the Dodgers rallied off the Haterless bullpen again. And so, yeah, that really sort of set the tone for the, you know, it just made for a super odd weekend. But yeah, back to Hader for a second. I think what's weird to me, like, so like I sort on one hand, like I think clearly, it's the playoffs, so he's going to have to pitch back-to-back games at some point, I think, for the Brewers. They, you know, whatever they did in game one to win, I get it. That made him unavailable for game two. But I think maybe if that's the case, like, man, then that's a win for the Dodgers by itself, because if that's what you sort of need at a Hader just to, like, sneak in or get by with one win, I think and Milwaukee's in a bad spot to begin with. So, but I just think they could have maybe managed that better, maybe pitch him one inning or maybe two in game one and at least have him available for a lefty stretch of two batters or something in game two, because that would have been huge for them, I think. But I don't know. We'll never know. But it just seemed like that really kind of turned the tide a little bit for the Dodgers.
I think highlighted at most by – it's funny you said nothing about the Dodgers is predictable, and I almost said, it's almost inerrantly, that except that Justin Turner is always good. Except right. that in game one, he had his like, worst – like, not only – he, like, went 0 for 4. How many strikeouts?
Four. So it was
– Yeah.
counting the playoffs counting the playoffs he's played in – or through game one, it was 974 games, and that was the first time ever he struck out four times. So, and then
yeah,
like,
he doesn't do that. He just didn't look himself, and then redemption time in game two.
Right, he was the guy when Chris Taylor was on third with a tying run in the ninth with two outs. Turner struck out three straight fastballs, and then earlier in the game, like there was a. He struck out looking, and it was a pretty bad call, I think. But like, you know, when it just sort of happens. But yeah, he was not pleased about that. But yeah, it was a bad game. But then yeah, so they're down. Even with the comeback on game two, the Dodgers are still down 3-2 in the eighth. And Turner hit a two-run shot against Jeremy Jeffress, and that, you know, all of a sudden you're like, wow, this is crazy. But then to sort of cap it all off, what was funny about this before the game, the Fox pregame studio show has like Frank Thomas, A-Rod, and David Ortiz. It's unwatchable, man. It's terrible. Like, look, I give like the Sportsnet LA like stuff is bad, and it's really bad. Like the pre and post game stuff, but like to the point where I rush for the mute button once the game is over or the change channel or whatever. But yeah, this is tough. It's a tough watch on a normal day. But like before game two, Frank Thomas was saying like the Dodgers should bench Justin Turner because he was so bad in game one, and like start Cody Bellinger against a lefty. It's like, have you watched like baseball at all? Like, yeah. And then so Turner had a single earlier, but then the home run. So that was like especially satisfying, like from that standpoint. Like it was a dumb comment. Had Turner not homered, and it made the homer just added to it. So it was very odd. But, yeah. Oh, yeah, speaking of predictable things, Alex Wood, no home runs allowed to 168 plate appearances against lefties all year, and he's allowed two home runs to lefties in the postseason. Freddie Freeman last round, and then Travis Shaw got him in game two. So, I mean, like, you just can't – you can't predict anything right now. It's just – it's so odd.
And it's also giving up homers lefty, which ended up being the deciding run in both games.
yeah.
And Dodger losses. So we're – you and I are going to be super busy, man, for the three games in a row at Dodger Stadium. So we're going to try to record again on Thursday. So let's get a quick preview of the all three home games. We go night game, afternoon game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so Pacific time, it's 4:30.
Well, not quote-unquote night, yeah.
You're right. No, but it's, yeah, close enough. 4:30, 6, and then 2. The 2 o'clock start is going to be weird on Wednesday. But, yeah, so we know the Dodgers sort of starters. It's Walker Buehler today, and then Rich Hill game 4, and Clayton Kershaw game 5. What was interesting, I thought, so another thing about game 2, the Dodgers ran out of position players. So they, at some point in the ninth, I'm trying to think here, I guess it, I can't, honestly, I can't remember if it came to this, but, oh, yeah, Kenta Maeda pitched the eighth, and then he was on deck to bat in the ninth, and then, like, it would have been a thing had the Dodgers not come back at that point, but they did. So, like, he didn't have to bat, but they were out of pinch hitters. So it would either have been Maeda hitting for himself or, like, Kershaw pinch hitting. So that would have been weird, but even weirder, had the ball, they had also used, 7 relievers, and had the, Dave Roberts said, had, like, the Brewers tied it against Kenley Jansen and it went into extras. Game 4 starter Rich Hill was going to pitch in extras. And then it even got to that, someone asked, yeah, yesterday, had, just say something came up with, and Austin Barnes couldn't catch anymore, what would you do? And he said Max Muncy was his emergency catcher. So they, at some point, like, if it came to this, like, if something happened to Austin Barnes, this was probably, we would probably have been a few innings into the game, in extra innings, Max Muncy would have had to catch, which he has never done in the majors or minors. Dave Roberts, during the, like, media call yesterday, said, Muncy's caught before, and unless it's, like, been in spring training or, like, instructional things or whatever, it hasn't come up in an actual game. So, but it would have been Muncy catching, and then, like, some pitcher playing a position because they were out of guys. So it would have been very interesting. But then also, like, the other thing would have been, like, Kike, but he had already been pinch hit out of the game in the seventh. So, like, it was very weird. But, like, look, that's why you have the full roster. They used it. Like, it worked. You know, you kind of go for today and worry about what might happen. It's weird. But anyway, yeah, so that was sort of an odd quirk to game two. The Brewers, we know Julius Chacin start today, game 3. They haven't really announced the game 4 starter. It probably depends what they need in game 3. They've been super aggressive with the bullpen. Their bullpen has more innings pitched than the starters in the first 5 games of the postseason. And that, with the starters pitching pretty well, including Chacin, like, Gio Gonzalez in game 1, he gave up a run. He's the only Brewer starter to do so far this October. And they pulled him after 2 innings. So it's like, if you're not scoreless, they will pull you in a heartbeat. Maybe they'll be aggressive with the bullpen, and then it puts them into a bit of a bind for game 4. I don't know. So yeah, not really sure who's pitching game 4. It might be a bullpen type thing for them, but I guess it probably depends on what happens in game 3.
Yeah, probably going to be a bullpen type thing then for a lot of these games going out. So hopefully the next time you and I talk, it is from the comfort of our home covering the next series that awaits. But you know, if not, we'll be talking about the game going ahead to Milwaukee. There's another outcome that I'm not going to talk about.
Sure.
Anything else you wanted to touch base before we hang up our voicemail line?
Yeah, it's just that both league championship series are 1-1. Things could get decided before the weekend, in theory, if, like, one of the teams wins all 3 middle games. But I think we've watched enough baseball to know that might not happen. So I'm thinking this next weekend is going to be the decider to go see who goes to the World Series. there has not been a repeat World Series matchup in 40 years when the Dodgers and Yankees met up in 77 and 78. And so if that happens, it's, you know, it would be Dodgers-Astros, and it would be the Dodgers trying to avoid the same fate they had in 77 and 78, which was losing both games of the Astros, unless they're setting up some sort of weird cathartic, like Dodgers beat the Astros in the 2021 World Series, then maybe that's all part of the grand plan. Who knows? But before that, we still have a lot of NLCS, so hope everybody enjoys it, and we will talk to you in a few days.